Will now come to order. It is 3:20 Monday, March 2nd, 2020 in Barnes Room 120. Members present are Representatives Hannon, Story, Stutes, and myself, Representative Sponholz, Chair. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Take a moment to silence your cell phones if you haven't already done so. Thank you. Before we begin, I want to thank Sophia Tenney, the House Labor and Commerce Secretary from Records, and Taylor Kenny from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee. Today, we are going to be covering two bills, House Bill 232 by Representative Greyer-Hopkins on municipal tax credits and House Bill 93, Military Spouse Courtesy Licenses by Representative Chris Tuck. Thank you for joining us, Representative Fields. And first up, we have House Bill 232, Municipal Tax Credits. Are you ready, Representative Hopkins? Come on forward. Go ahead and put yourself on record and recap the legislation for us.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. For the record, committee members, my name is Representative Greyer-Hopkins. I'm representative to House District 4, North Rural Fairbanks. Thank you very much for hearing House Bill 232 today. I introduced House Bill 232 at the request of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. This legislation allows local governments to offer municipal tax credits to home and businesses business owners who invest in property improvements that result in either increased energy efficiency or improved local air quality. Relying on the old adage that local problems are best solved through local solutions, House Bill 232 allows municipalities to offer tax credits to businesses or residents and or residents who make investments that will result in cleaner air or reductions in overall energy use. The bill allows for maximum flexibility by municipalities who choose to offer those credits, and it is my hope and the hope of the requesting municipality that these tools will result in more interior Alaskans choosing to convert their home heating systems to the expanding interior gas utility distribution system, thereby maximizing the return on the state's investment in that interior gas utility. The Interior Energy Project. Of course, this legislation has also garnered support beyond just our local municipality. Aurora Energy and the Usabelli Coal Mine have authored letters of support that should be in your bill packet, as well as the Alaska Municipal League, the Alaska State Home Builders Association, and their local affiliate in Interior Alaska, the Interior Gas Utility, the Alaska Miners Association, and Cold Climate Housing Research Center have all endorsed this legislation. As we continue to meet with more groups who come through the building and talk to them about this legislation, more and more groups are supportive of it. As one representative discussed in the previous committee of referral, this is a no-harm bill that allows municipalities the maximum credit or maximum flexibility. Of course, you do need to be a municipality that does have property taxes for this to be truly impactful. But we have expanded the legislation also to offer more options for municipalities. It was originally a PM 2.5 specific air quality improvement. Now it is any air quality improvement. And it was originally just new construction for homes or businesses. But now it also applies to give the authority for retrofits, refurbishments, and improvements to an existing home. Madam Chair Sponholz, I am available for any questions.
Thank you. Good catch there. All right. Does anybody on the committee have any questions? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair. My question is speculative in nature. Have really no concerns because it's up to the municipal government to set the standards. I actually speculate that Fairbanks has probably figured out how much tax credit they're going to need to give to get some return. Do you have any information about what they think they will need to give as an incentive of a credit to get the results they would like in reduced air pollution?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, I have not heard what their specific plans are for it. Each type of system at a home is going to have a slightly different cost for hooking up to a natural gas system. Much of the area that is available for hookup to our interior gas utilities is within the city of Fairbanks as well, and North Pole, which is outside of the city. And so those will fluctuate based on who pays which property tax to which entity and where they are on that system. So, no, I have not heard specifically how it is. I do know that very little of my district will ever get access to it. So it is an altruistic bill that I am carrying.
Anybody else? All right. I have a couple of questions for you, Representative Hopkins. And I notice that that the bill is defined right now, as it's defined right now, would only allow for the tax credits to be good for 1 year at a time. Was that by design?
Chair Sponholz, no, that was through, where's my bill over here? That was through legal drafting, so it was not by design either way.
Okay.
I would assume that the local municipality would need to make sure that they reauthorize those or maintain them throughout the each year's assessment period, although assuming is probably not my best bet if I'm speaking authoritatively on the bill.
Well, we do have somebody, I guess, also from AML in the room who might have some comments on that. But it does that in considering the bill, it does seem that there might be times when an energy efficiency improvement, you might want to take the tax credit over multiple years, or there might be some projects that might take longer. Has there been any discussion?
Chair Funnels, for clarification, are you talking about where it says a municipality may by ordinance provide for an air quality improvement tax credit to offset a portion of the property taxes on real property during the immediate preceding year? The my understanding, Chair, is that the way, and I'd be perfectly happy to be told I'm wrong or clarified by Alaska Municipal League or anybody online, they're only assessed year by year, so and you write those property taxes for the previous year. You pay your property taxes for the previous year, so it would be the way it's written. My understanding is it would be what those assessments are for that previous year, and so they would get that 1 year tax credit for then, not would it carry forward, or would they be able to offset those tax credits for future years? And that would be hopefully that would be available to the municipality to write how they'd like it.
Representative Hopkins, is it possible that you might have a credit that was larger than your tax liability in any 1 year?
Chair Sponholz. In terms of property tax credit, I've never heard of one done that way. The way the senior property tax exemption is written right now, or a homeowner property tax exemption, it is up to the first $100,000 of a home for the senior property tax exemption. If your home is worth less than $100,000, that property tax would be written only up to the $92,485 or whatever it would be, not those additional tax credits left over.
So is it your intention that the tax credit would apply against the tax itself or against the taxable value of the property?
The cost itself, the tax that the resident has to pay to the borough.
So the tax itself to the borough, not the tax value?
Yes, sir.
The value of the property. Okay. There was one other question, and that was that it looks like the term energy efficient construction hasn't been defined in statute currently. And I'm wondering if there's any other reference statute.
Chair Sponholz, in our discussion with Legislative Legal, that was not a concern that they had.
All right. Was it your hope that that would take place at the local level?
Chair Sponholz, giving municipalities the maximum freedom that they have to construct these how they want, and I've heard a number of ideas that would be hopefully done at the local level.
Okay, so there's multiple ways they could be structured depending on what the community wants.
Yes, Chair Sponholz, there's many energy auditors out there that can look at what they have. You can simply follow different building code standards. From you demolish a derelict one-star building, you follow the five-star LEED standards, prove that you follow those five-star LEED building standards, and you are, declared to be above and beyond what is or the previous construction, so you can get those tax credits or go through an energy auditor. Mm-hmm. Many different ways for those energy improvements to be shown to be effective.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
Are there any other questions, Representative Hannon?
Thank you, Chair. So my question actually stems from reading your letters of support, and in my mind, I guess I was thinking about local homeowners getting this tax exemption, but I do see letters of support from commercial organizations. Do you, and again, sort of speculative, has the Fairbanks North Star Borough, are there specific commercial enterprises that they hope and anticipate would reduce their air pollution by taking advantage of the tax credit versus the individual homeowner coming on board with a new energy efficient system?
Chair Hannon, or Representative Hannon through the chair, you sort of mentioned two different things in that question. So it is certainly the intent that commercial residences would be, or commercial businesses would also be able to hook up to the interior gas utility system, not limited to homeowners by any extent. So that would need to make sure that they have the authority for commercial buildings as well. In addition, if you look at the Aurora Energy Plant, and one of the reasons that they signed on is They have been looking at creating a dry wood kiln for Fairbanks residents to be able to purchase dried firewood, which would be allow for better air quality improvement for wood burners in Fairbanks. We're not outlawing, and nobody is looking at outlawing wood burning in Fairbanks. Simply burning dry wood makes a huge difference than wet wood or railroad ties. And in terms of energy efficiency improvements, it does need to also target the commercial entities of it, because one way we were looking at this bill being a large benefit to communities is sort of an economic boost. It gives an incentive. It gives the municipalities the ability to create tax incentives for new construction, especially in terms of demolishing old construction and improving it. I was using the example of a one-star building going to a five-star building now. There's ways of reducing the new constructor's tax liability while not negatively impacting the municipality's revenue or offsetting those lost revenues onto other people. There's creative ways that we've been hearing about that would be beneficial for sort of economic development in light of our small capital budget.
Thank you. All right. I would like to recognize that Representative Gillis got here at about 2:23 and welcome Representative Rasmussen, who got here about 2:29. One of them got here at 2:23, and one of them got here at 3:23. Thank you, man. I seem to do that a lot, don't I? All right, 3:23 and 3:29.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more focused on the minute hand than on the hour. Apparently, these are the days of our lives. All right. Are there any other questions for Representative Hopkins? All right. Seeing none. Thank you. Do I see a question? This might be your first question, Representative Gillis. I'm so excited.
Well, yes, ma'am. Does this is new construction only, or if you have energy saving already, are you going to get a credit for that on your taxes?
Representative Gillis, through the chair, it's my honor to answer your first question. It would not be for past improvements made. It would be for going forward.
So if someone had already spent $15,000 to put a heating floor in already, it would not apply to them.
That's Representative Gillis to the chair. That is correct.
Okay.
I apologize for
no
good work
problem.
That you've done before, but thank you for that, improving your energy efficiency as well, if that was you.
And just to clarify, I think that the bill says it's to allow for tax credits based on real property improvements made in the immediately preceding tax year. So it is specific in that respect. So, all right. With that, thank you very much. All right, we're going to go ahead and open up the bill for public testimony. Is there anybody in the room who would like to testify on the bill? All right, come on up.
Chair Sponholz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nils Andreasen. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, and I really just want to commend the bill sponsor for the construction of this bill and maximizing local control. The way that the bill is constructed really leaves local governments the ability, empowers local governments in a way that is extremely helpful. It allows local governments to set the terms that they deem necessary for both their economic development but also their tax valuation. And as they're looking for solutions to air quality and energy efficiency improvements, this gives them additional tools. And those tools, the more that we can create those for local governments, the better able they are to address the needs of Alaskans. So, again, want to thank the committee for its attention to this bill and the bill sponsor for the construction of a bill that maximizes local control.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Andreasen? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. Anybody else in the room that would like to testify? All right, next up we're going to go to Aaron Welterlin with the Alaska State Home Builders Association.
Hi, Chair Sponholz and members of the committee. This is Aaron Welterlin. How are you?
Wonderful. Why don't you proceed with your testimony?
Great. Thank you for the time and taking my testimony today. I'm a local contractor in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a member of both the Interior Alaska Building Association as well as the Alaska State Home Building Association. As you know, the Alaska State and Homebuilding Association wrote a letter of support on February 6th supporting this bill. We look forward to it, you know, passing as quickly as possible. We believe it makes a lot of sense. The State and Homebuilding Association has a long history of supporting energy-efficient construction. We've supported state programs in the past, such as home energy rebates, and we constantly support funding for low-income weatherizations. The reason this bill makes sense, I mean, throughout the state, I think you guys know, but especially in Fairbanks, we deal with a lot of issues that other areas in the state deal with, and places like Anchorage don't as much. However, currently our appraisals are relatively low in Fairbanks. Our costs to build are extremely high. We have some of the highest energy costs in the nation, outside the road system, of course, the bush of Alaska. Most consumers want energy-efficient homes, but they often can't afford them due to the low appraisals, again, and our high construction costs. If we were able to enact this where there were some tax credits where you could model it like AHFC's energy rebate program, it could really, you know, stimulate some housing starts in the Fairbanks community. Energy-efficient construction pays dividends for years to come in terms of monthly cost reductions, as well as healthy homes, which lead to healthy inhabitants, which is what we all want. One other thing is fixing or remodeling of poorly constructed homes is far too expensive than building them properly up front. Because of this, Alaska State Home Builders fully supports this bill, again, because it improves homeowners and tenants' living standards for the foreseeable future. You know, there's a lot of other things we go on and on about this, but it has real promise, I believe, in generating some true economic starts in Fairbanks, especially, where, again, our energy costs are quite high. It is cold here. It's even cold today. It's going to be 30 below again tonight, just so you guys in Juneau know. We can feel our pain. But if you can do this, it gives the ability for contractors and developers and homeowners all to kind of get a vested interest. We can build an energy-efficient house. We can lower our PM2.5 as a byproduct of it and give healthy, quality, energy-efficient homes that cost less to heat and operate over time. Members of the committee, this concludes my testimony at this time. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Welterlin? All right, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not a question as much of a statement, but I appreciate your testimony and wanted to note regarding your comment about low appraisals. I do know that Alaska Housing is working really hard with the Appraisal Institute here in Alaska to make sure that appraisers are well trained in valuing energy efficient properties. So I appreciate you highlighting that concern, and we'll make sure to do what we can on the state's end to make home building as, I don't want to say easy as possible, but as possible as we can. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Stay warm, Mr. Welterlin. All right.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Brandon Snodgrass of the Alaska State Home Builders Association.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first I'd like to thank prior speakers for their input. I would like to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Brandon Snodgrass. I'm employed by First National Bank Alaska as a construction and commercial lender. I also sit on the boards of the Anchorage Home Builders Association and the Alaska State Home Building Association. AHBA, ASHBA, and FNBA support energy-efficient construction. Energy-efficient homes are more beneficial to the environment, cost less to maintain, last longer, and provide healthier living space for their occupants. I see many people that want to build energy-efficient homes. I have also seen many times where they've reduced the planned efficiency of their home because of the equity requirements and valuation of the property. A borrower, when they're building a new home, typically has to have 20 to 25% equity into the project up front through land or cash. If the valuation comes in lower than the total cost, you'll often see borrowers sacrifice energy efficiency instead of having to come up with the extra cash to build the home the way they intended to. Some people will do it just because it's that important to them that they will sacrifice that, knowing that. I do see that sometimes, but a lot of times people will make cuts instead of coming up with the extra cash. That's where this bill would come in handy, is if they know they can put in the extra cash up front and may not see those savings from the energy efficiency immediately, the tax breaks will help cover that. If you look at the average ownership of a new home is anywhere from 6 to 8 years, and a lot of times these efficiencies that are built in, it takes a while to get that money back. But we do want people to build energy-efficient homes without thinking of just the next 6 to 8 years. We want to think long-term on that. A lot of this is due to appraisal issues. When you're doing residential appraisals, it's all based on market comps. Whereas if you're doing a commercial building appraisal, it's about doing using a cap rate and a return on investment. So a home that is lower or a building that costs less to heat is going to end up being worth more because of the higher cap rate on that and the higher rate of return. Whereas in residential appraisal, they're looking at market comps. So if you looked at two houses side by side that look exactly the same, have the same features, except one has the energy efficiency, you oftentimes, you know, but it's going to cost $50,000 more, you're not going to see people gravitate towards that house because they're not going to see how they're going to save $50,000 in the future by doing so. So that's part of the issue that we run into. Certain things like heat recovery ventilation systems, you see things that cost $5,000. A lot of people will not put them in because they don't get any valuation in the appraisal for them at all. And what they end up living in is an unhealthy home with no air exchange, and everything stagnates, and it just makes the home much unhealthier to live in. Tax abatement may be enough for people to decide to build homes in this way, knowing they can recoup the cost. Some of the issues that we saw that were raised when we were in Juneau before was, would this consolidate the tax base, putting more of the onus on other property owners? No, it wouldn't, because this would incentivize building higher value homes, and it's just going to be reducing the tax burden on that new home and will increase the tax base for the different municipalities. The Municipality of Anchorage and the Anchorage Assembly worked with the Anchorage Home Builders Association last year. We started putting together an assembly ordinance that is ready to go. It seems as we have a lot of support from the city for it to offer a tax credit if this bill does go through. It would be, you had the question earlier about the definition of energy efficient homes. The way we wrote it in the proposed ordinance in the assembly for Anchorage was using the system that AHFC currently uses, and there would be different levels of rebates based on the quality of the home that was built according to AHFC standards, or how much the home was improved if there was a retrofit. I do believe also this would add to the economy in Alaska. I don't have the numbers, but when AHFC had their energy efficiency rebate program in years past, there were a lot of companies that benefited from that, and the benefit from that rippled throughout the economy. A lot of those companies that were doing some of those retrofitting projects, or, you know, companies that were putting in new windows, new doors, siding, things like that, a lot of those companies are now out of business, or they've moved out of state where there is more work going on. Something like this could potentially create new business opportunities for new businesses to enter the market or for existing businesses. Thank you very much for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Rasmussen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Brandon, for calling in and testifying. I was curious, under the Anchorage ordinance, do you know if solar is going to be included in that ordinance?
Representative Rasmussen, through the chair, let me take a look. I have the proposed one here in front of me. Basically, it was written with an inspector certifying according to HSC standards or the Passive House Institute of the U.S. So it'd be 3 or 4 or 5-step improvement under HSC standards or new construction, or if we had a FIAS certified home. There is no mention of solar, but solar power would help towards that FIAS certification. There are growing amounts of solar projects happening in Anchorage, and I'm not positive on this, but I haven't heard of another one. I believe I have financed the only home in the Anchorage inspection area that is completely off the grid with solar and wind power. But that was about 7 years ago.
Awesome. Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Mr. Snodgrass, I have a question about whether the limitation to the tax credit on energy efficiency being limited to 1 year represents sort of an obstacle or sort of a pretty natural framework from your perspective.
So the 1 year, I didn't read it that way, is that it was only good for 1 year. I read it as things that have happened within the last year. The way we have the municipality ordinance, proposed ordinance written in Anchorage, is that it would allow for 5 years of tax abatement for anything that was done, retrofitted, or built within the last year when the credit was applied for. I did not, where exactly did it say? Yeah, I think it just said previously, immediately preceding tax year. So kind of the way I read it is, if I built a house right now that qualified for that, that in 2021, my tax rebate could start. And then the municipality could give, whether they wanted it, 5 or 10 years. But I may be wrong in that. That's kind of how I read it.
Do we have anybody from Ledge Legal? All right, we don't have anybody from Ledge Legal. I think that this is an issue that I want to just make sure that local communities have the flexibility to be able to implement if they would like to offer a multi-year tax credit. And the reason I ask is that I could imagine, for example, in Anchorage, you could have a higher value property for which, you know, adding in the energy efficiency elements could be fairly pricey, but which could pay themselves back if they were, you know, spread out over several years, and for which the municipality of Anchorage, for example, would be willing to offer a multi-year tax credit since they have identified, you know, energy efficiency as one of the primary strategies in the climate action plan at the local level. And I just want to make sure that we're allowing, you know, for communities that want to offer multi-year tax credits, the ability to do so, and we're not constraining it anyway. Representative Hopkins.
That's the intent, but yeah, I would support that.
All right. Representative Hopkins.
Chair Sponholz, thank you. I agree with the public justifier, Mr. Snodgrass, as well. That is the intent of it, because it should be, like you said, the improvements would be made the previous year, but the tax credit could be for multiple years afterwards. So you can install a new boiler in your house that does all of these types of credits, and the municipality would have the flexibility to say, and now you'll get a tax credit for 5 years, or new construction of a building, you can offset your property taxes and pay the old property taxes instead of the new ones, and then do that assessed value for 5 years to help with that tax liability that Mr. Snodgrass was talking about before. So yes, that would be available, and I am sorry if I answered your question unclearly before.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think that's an important element to get on the record as a part of the legislative documentation as we're moving forward. All right. With that, is there anybody else? It doesn't look like we have anybody else. We do have Joseph Casey, who is an assistant state assessor, on the phone. Mr. Casey, maybe you could answer the question regarding tax exemptions over multiple years.
Hi. I would have read that. I've attended law school, but I'm not a lawyer, but I would have read that to mean only the 1 year after the improvement is made.
All right, thank you. It sounds like we are all in agreement, and I just wanted to make sure that that was clearly expressed in the legislative record. All right. Does Representative Hannon have a question? Did you hear that differently?
Thank you, Chair. I heard his statement in opposition to yours.
Oh.
I thought I heard him say only.
Mr. Casey,
could re-answer that so that we don't.
As the language is written currently, I would have read that to mean only the 1 year after. And if you are intending something like 5 years, I think you might want to reword the bill.
It does say an ordinance may provide for an energy efficient new tax construction tax credit to offset a portion of property taxes due on a residential commercial property that during the immediate preceding tax year was improved with energy efficient new construction. We may want to spend a little time making sure that we get this right. Can we get anybody with Ledge Legal on before the end of this committee? All right. We're going to hold on to this for a moment while we hear Representative Tuck's bill then. And for right now, we're going to close public testimony. All right, so we're going to hold this. We're going to get an answer to our question and determine whether or not we need an amendment to the bill to make sure that expresses our intent clearly in the language. All right, so we're going to move on to HB 93, Military Spouse Courtesy Licenses, by Representative Tuck, if you want to proceed forward. All right, Representative Tuck and Mr. Mason, why don't you put yourselves on the record and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Representative Chris Tuck from District 23, South Central Anchorage, and joining me is my staff person, Mike Mason. I would like to thank the committee and Chair Sponholz for allowing us to present House Bill 93 today. House Bill 93 calls for the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to prepare an annual report to allow the Alaska Legislature to evaluate the progress of a program to make temporary courtesy occupational licenses available to the spouses of active duty service members stationed here in Alaska. In 2011, the Alaska Legislature passed House Bill 28, and that provided expedited temporary courtesy licenses if a military spouse possesses a license from a previous jurisdiction with a similar requirements to the state of Alaska. However, the bill didn't include reporting requirements, and it's a pretty extensive process for all of our professional licensees to go through this process of making temporary courtesy licenses available. This was for active service members, spouses, and allows them to practice their chosen trade without having to go through the time-consuming process of meeting state licensure requirements before beginning work. And expediting courtesy licenses for military spouses allows them to go to work quickly after relocating to Alaska while they continue to work towards their state requirements to hold their license. So just real quick, Alaska has a lot of military families. We all know that. And military families are relocating here all the time. And when they do relocate to Alaska, they're picking up, they're moving to a new location. They have new neighbors. They have a new home. They're trying to get their kids enrolled in, their children enrolled in school, and just all the hardships that go along with that. One additional hardship is military spouses not being able to work in the occupation that they were traditionally working in. And you really don't want to see military spouses, for example, a dental hygienist coming in and then having to work at a front desk because they can't work their occupation. It's a hardship, economic hardship on the family as well. Data from the Department of Defense shows that there are 11,154 spouses of active duty military personnel here in Alaska. There are another 2,729 spouses of reserve military personnel in Alaska. In total, we have about 13,800 military spouses. 8,905 of those military spouses are part of the active workforce, and 2,313 of those military spouses have and require to have occupational licenses. 1,973 of the military spouses with occupational license hold health care and education jobs. 68% of married military members report that their spouse's ability to maintain a career impacts their decisions on whether or not they will remain in the military. So this has a high impact on the families, and it also has a high impact on military careers. If their spouses aren't, if they're not able to maintain the same household income as they're used to, then they may require someone to leave the military to find higher occupations themselves. Every year, about 14.5% of military spouses move across state lines. 1.1% of civilian spouses move across state lines every year. And currently, 34% of military spouses nationwide, in the nationwide labor force, are required to hold occupational license, which is about a third of all military spouses. So House Bill 93 expands the use of temporary courtesy occupational licenses, and it's a high priority to the Department of Defense. It allows temporary courtesy licenses up to 180 days, and they can be extended for another 180 days if necessary. And the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensees offers a version of licensure by endorsement, credential, or reciprocity for over 100 professional licenses currently. And with us, we do have Tammy Perot. She's with the Northwest Regional Liaison with the Department State Liaison Office. She will testify about the importance of temporary courtesy occupational license with the U.S. Department of Defense. And we also have in the audience behind me, I see Sarah Chambers. She's with the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. She's able to answer any specific questions about the occupational licensing here in Alaska. And then, and she actually is the director for the professional licensing through the Alaska Division of Corporations.
Representative Tuck, how long are the temporary license for?
Up to 6 months.
Up to 6 months, and then they can be extended for another how many days?
Another 180 days. So it's actually technically 180 days, not 6 months.
Okay.
So what House Bill 93 really seeks to do is just have a report come into the legislature so we can see the progress of this, because this bill passed, the original bill allowing temporary licensure for spouses passed in 2011. And we just want to basically have a report. Additionally, it does allow to have, may have one personnel to, let me see if I can find it here. It calls for the Department of Community and Economic Development to produce and distribute the informational materials annually and then biannually to the legislature. And it calls for the department to encourage the professional licensing boards to designate a single employee to serve as the point of contact for the public information.
All right. You want to walk us through a brief sectional?
Can I have a brief at ease, if you don't mind?
At ease.
Mike Mason, staff to Representative Chris Tuck, and I'll briefly walk through the bill. Section 1 of the bill amends AS 08.01.063 to add a new subsection, and this basically defines the report that the Representative Tuck mentioned. The report will go through the expedited application procedures, also the progress that has been made towards implementing the regulations for the licenses, the number and type of licenses that have been issued, and then the efforts that the boards have been making to inform people about the temporary courtesy licenses under the section, and specifically the military community here in the state of Alaska. The department is going to submit that report to the Joint Armed Services Committee before the first day of March of each year, and shall consolidate the two most recent reports and submit a biennial report to the Alaska Legislature before the first day of March of the first regular session of each legislature. And they shall annually produce and distribute to each board that is authorized to issue the temporary courtesy licenses under this section informational materials that will be used for the purpose of improving the board's knowledge of the licenses and the application process and the best practices to provide for applicants for these licenses. And that is a brief run through of the of the bill.
And so if I may, Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
I'd just like to add that this is a very difficult process. We know that. This report will help us as a legislature know where we're going and how we can help out the department to make sure that's there. Also, because of the turnover that we have from one administration to the another administration, we want to make sure that there's consistent progress going through and the legislature can basically make it accountable and have the oversight.
All right. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, what prompted this bill?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stutes, what prompted the bill was not having the ability for military spouses to get their temporary licenses over the years.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought this was just amending the bill asking for reporting. Didn't you say that the bill passed in 2011?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, yes, the bill passed in 2011, but we still haven't given the ability with all the different occupational licenses that we have to be able to issue the temporary licenses for those military spouses. We have it there, but we have to look at some of the conditions as the credentials. We have to look at the past experiences of other states. We got to look at see what their requirements are and what their testing is to make sure that there is Not necessarily. Right, we also have to look and see if there's already reciprocity there. But to see if there's anything else that we need to do, or if we shall have any concerns about a particular license being transferred over or issuing that temporary license.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit confused. Mm-hmm. Tell me the difference between this bill and the bill that passed in 2011.
Okay, so the difference is that this is the reporting requirement to the legislature as we fulfill the requirements for the bill that was passed in 2011.
And follow up? Thank you, Madam Chair. So there is already a reciprocity agreement in place, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, there's already a bill passed to allow temporary licenses, but not all the criteria is being met. We're not still able to issue some of these temporary licenses for all occupations. There's a lot of work, and I'll let Ms. Chambers explain the work that goes into issuing these temporary licenses, but we are not there yet for all occupations to be able to issue a temporary license.
Follow up. Thank you, Matt, for indulging me.
I'll give you one more, and I think we're going
to
invite Sarah.
Straight. So this bill is allowing occupations that do not currently have that?
Mm-mm.
I'm confused.
This okay, when it comes to, if I may, Madam Chair, when it comes to professional licenses, there is a lot, even with a particular license, let's say, because I'm an electrician, just for me to have my certificate of fitness, which is really a license mm-hmm. to do electrical work in the state of Alaska,
mm-hmm.
For example, the state of Washington doesn't reciprocate with Alaska. And the reason why is because our testing standards are a little bit lighter than the state of Washington's. We changed our testing requirements to be a true, false, multiple choice. So they no longer want to reciprocate with us because they feel like that we are a little bit watered down to what they're used to. Therefore, the state of Alaska does not reciprocate with the state of Washington, even though they have more stringent requirements to have their license. It's just a reciprocated. If they're not going to do something for us, we're not going to do it with them. So what the state of Alaska should look at in issuing temporary licenses, and I know this falls under the Department of Labor, not necessarily Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, what we need to look at is, well, why not allow at least a temporary license for an electrician coming up here working from the state of Washington? But looking at state to state, each individual, some states don't require a license to do electrical work. So the real question is, should we be allowing someone to come up here and have a temporary license performing electrical work when they don't already have a license? So all these alignments need to happen for a temporary license to be issued per profession, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of work to do that because it's different from state to state, and it's different between occupations, what we would like to have is a report come back to us seeing where we're at per occupations and from which states.
Yeah. So we've already allowed this to happen in a bill that passed in 2011, but it's not being implemented or executed in every place, and you've asked via this bill for a report on why and what needs to be done. Summarize. Okay.
Just to add through the chair, and Sarah Chambers can testify to this, the program is not being used quite as much as was anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
There's not as many military spouses that are using it. So the hope is that the report will allow some increased attention, and then the other provisions with the dedicated person on each board that will that will help facilitate more usage of these temporary licenses.
All right. Thank you.
I have another question. So how did the need for this bill come to light?
Through the chair, the need for this bill came
through
to light.
Through the chair, sorry.
Yeah, the Representative Stutes, the need for this bill came to light because temporary licenses weren't military spouses were not able to get the temporary licenses.
All right.
Thank you.
And we're going to now thank you very much to the bill sponsor. We're going to ask Ms. Chambers to come up and talk a little bit about temporary licensure. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And This is what I've spent a good part of my last several years working on, and I appreciate Representative Tuck's efforts to gather data on the progress that we're making. The 2011 bill says that the department and boards may issue temporary licenses. It does not mandate that temporary licenses be issued or created for military spouses. And there is a level of frustration which Ms. Perot, who's on the line from the Department of Defense, will, I'm sure, back this up. There's a level of frustration among Alaska's military families, military community, that boards can choose to do it or not. And we've even introduced a different bill that would make that a shall rather than a may. This is one in a continuum of best practices that the Department of Defense is illuminating for state legislatures and state licensing professionals, and is actually one of the temporary licensing is actually one of the lighter ways to accommodate military families. There's again, as Ms. Perot will probably explain, there's a wide range of things that we could be doing, with licensing compacts being the most desired aspect. So this report would compel us to provide the data that legislators who are interested in this topic could use to see what are we doing, how is it being used, is there a demand, is the demand being met, where are we falling on the DOD's sort of scale of compliance, is Alaska at risk for losing military basing opportunities or military expansion opportunities because we're not responsive enough to these workplace economic needs. So I hope that's helpful, that it kind of puts the report in the large spectrum of efforts that the DOD is asking states to do in response to military families.
Representative Fields has a question.
Thanks, through the chair. What temporary licenses are currently being issued, just in general, not just to military families?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, I can get a list for you. We offer over 200 different types of licenses, and it's sort of a patchwork quilt among our 21 boards and 22 professions.
Follow-up. Do you have the ability now to issue temporary licenses for doctors?
Through the chair, yes. We do have the ability to issue temporary licenses for doctors.
Follow-up?
Okay. I guess I'd just like to see that list. And mm-hmm. as a comment, note that Americans for Prosperity and ALEC and some other groups have put a lot of energy into deregulating occupational licensing with the goal of breaking unions and driving down wages. And I certainly support this bill and support our military families, but I want to be really careful that we're not sort of allowing military families to be used as subterfuge to undermine Alaska's union density and our high wages. Thank you.
I concur with the concern that we want to make sure that our licensure standards are not being undermined by forces outside of Alaska. We want to be very intentional about it. At the same time, we want to make sure that we're supporting military spouses and taking advantage of the human capital that we have in the state. And I think we might have a few questions for Representative Hannon. You do.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Chambers, since I think you've been there the entirety since the law was changed in 2011, and you've said that DOD has expressed some concerns over the May, what is your perception about which boards have chosen to not automatically give a temporary licensure? What's the stall point? Because you and I have had conversations about other temporary licensure bill that is being, the omnibus bill that's being offered. And so we've already been through it with a subgroup, so a very narrow population. So where's the group that we think aren't getting the information that they could get a temporary license and think they should? And what is our board of controlling that licensure said, well, it's a may, and so we've not done this group, let's say appraisers, and our legitimate professional reason is because they don't have adequate information about comparables.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, since 2011, in 2011 and subsequently, we provided a lot of information to our boards, and we kind of helped them with a framework for how this might look. And the struggles that the boards have had are related to mostly to sort of natural board evolution. And I think Representative Tuck spoke to that, that members go off the board, members come on the board. Maybe the one person who where the light bulb really went off or they had the passion for it, their interest waned. Many of our boards are only five people. So while we're beating a steady drum every day, there are volunteers that are meeting three or four times a year, and it just hasn't risen to the level of interest or attention as their other priorities are. And so that's one of the factors that we finally said with the omnibus bill that the department is promoting, is that we believe that we should just take it over, temporary licensing, in partnership with the boards, but give the department the ability to just pull the Band-Aid off and get this done. Because the boards have had opportunities, mostly through attrition, mostly through just waning interest, competing priorities. They haven't all adopted temporary licenses, so we feel like it's a high enough priority per the DOD's request and some of the stories that we're hearing from military spouses.
Follow up.
If the omnibus bill passed that is going to blanket a granting of temporary licenses and efficiencies, would it be duplicative of the law that already gives that authority on military spouses?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the bill was crafted, the omnibus bill, which is not this bill, is crafted to sort of subsume this. It would continue to require expediting of military spouse licensure, but it would open up an opportunity for more than just military spouses to be able to take advantage of temporary licensing.
And then follow-up?
One follow-up. Thank you, Chair. There's no fiscal note for this bill, and that somewhat surprises me. And I know at some point some of the ability for licensure compliance is a staffing need to be able to stamp the license and send it out. Would you anticipate a cost or a fiscal note to do a broad swath? I mean, if we've only had a couple hundred Department of Defense military spouses apply, and we've been able to keep up with that, but we're hoping the report drives us to say there's 5,000 licenses, would we anticipate that there is a fiscal note to make this goal achievable, if that's our goal?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, currently we believe we have adequate authority to get that done. And if that was a problem, we would make a budget request.
And this bill is just providing a report on the work that's already being done, as Ms. Chambers has referenced. So, Representative Story.
Thank you. My question was similar to Rep. Hannon's question about what was kind of the holdup for this happening. And it made me wonder, all the different boards, what access do they have to staff from the Department of Commerce to have help in making sure they understand the goals of the department and how there's hearing concerns and how this was bottlenecked?
Through the chair, Representative Story, all of our boards have assigned staff who work every day. They come in and that's their job, is to support that board and to process licenses for that board. We have an interesting staffing structure where most of our boards have licensing examiners who are more junior level assistants, and then a few of our boards have executive administrators who can engage more in policy. Very few of our boards have those. They're partially exempt positions through statute. So in the absence of an executive administrator who can really help with policy, our management team kind of comes alongside our examiners and the board and provides that information. At the end of the day, though, the boards are responsible for hearing what we're passing along, the things that we're saying we believe are important or assistance that we want to provide, and they're the decision makers to get that done. So if we present to each board, as we did when the bill, the licensing bill was first initiated in 2011, we present that information and sort of hand it over to them, training, education. It's up to them to say, okay, well, our agenda's full today. We want to put it on the next agenda and form a subcommittee and get it done. If they do that, then we can staff those committees and help them. But if they don't express an interest or desire to make that governance decision, then we can't come along and provide that administrative support.
Follow up?
So you can just offer through your staff and get back to the board, and the board chairs saying, we've repeatedly had this request. Can we come and present to you again? Those sorts of measures is what you would need to take.
Absolutely. Through the chair, Representative Story, we provide, I think, a reasonable amount of education and training to our board members about what that responsibility means and what's available to them. And it is time, regardless of what military licensing-related bill passes this year, it's probably time to re-up that conversation with our boards and say, okay, here's what we've been discussing with the legislature, and here's the legislation that passed, whether it's a report, whether it's augmented military licensing or omnibus licensing, and hand that back to them and make sure that they truly understand what the will of the legislature is.
All right, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know how much this pertains to the actual bill in front of us, but I do have a little bit of concern about the department's direction still to, if you will, as you said, rip the Band-Aid off from certain boards. My frame is solely on the only two boards that I've been licensed through, the Real Estate Commission and the appraisal board, but I think that the state could potentially take on some risk if we're not really analyzing the kind of impact, that the reciprocal and temporary licensing can have just based on just liability that we're exposed to. I know that as an appraisal requirement to become certified in the state, we have to do a certain amount of hours over a certain amount of time, and we can't do it in less than that amount of time as a way to gain competency on top of taking an examination. And I'm not sure about all the rest. And I do see that there are probably opportunities like nursing. I'm kind of surprised that the athletic trainer I don't know if that's just because they're not currently certified, but wasn't on the list of or is on the list of exemptions. I just think that we need to really consider what we're doing, because there are risks associated with this, and a lot of people attribute the whole housing crash in the 80s to appraisers who are overvaluing properties. Banks were overlending, and when you have people who aren't competent in a field, especially if it's something market specific, it can be kind of catastrophic. So I don't expect an answer to that. I'm just, voicing my concern about the whole temporary license. And mm-hmm. The other concern I have is we have Alaskans. It took me months to get my license from the point of application to being approved. And I want to make sure that we're not putting any group before another group. So we have Alaskans who are trying to start working, and they need to get their approval through a board. And we also have military families who are coming in. And, maybe it becomes a status quo to do everybody with temporary licenses. But, again, the exposure to liability worries me. So,
Representative Rasmussen, I thank you for lifting up that one particular example. And when you talk about, the myriad of licenses that we're talking about in the state of Alaska and the implications for health and safety and financial security for our state, I think this chair is going to be particularly reticent to rip the Band-Aid off when it comes to, major reforms that I think it's our job as legislators to make sure we're doing the due diligence to make sure that we understand the implications of the kinds of decisions that are being discussed I just want to, you know, the public to understand we're not talking about the omnibus bill that has been introduced by the governor. Today we're talking specifically about Representative Tuck's bill to require a report around military spouse licensure. All right, back to Representative Fields.
Thank you. To the chair, I agree. My colleague articulated those concerns well, and I just wanted to put on the record, I've already heard from doctors who are very opposed to anything that would expand or even use temporary licensing for medical professionals. They're just very concerned about the health and safety implications mm-hmm. of such a step.
All right. Representative Gillis.
Yes, ma'am. Can people at this time, military personnel spouses, apply for a temporary license?
Through the chair, Representative Gillis, if the board offers a temporary license, what? Then they can. Part of the problem is that not all boards have offered temporary licenses, and so if they don't put those in regulation, then they're not available for people to apply for.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a follow-up?
Do you have some that some temporary licenses from the board at this time?
Thank you. Through the chair, yes, Representative Gillis, we offer quite a few temporary licenses for a variety of programs, including doctors and nurses right now.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, we have to keep doing this dance every time.
Yeah. How many licenses have been requested in the last, say, 2 or 3 years? 3 years. When you said shall instead of
may,
it seems to me like maybe you're not given licenses. I don't know. That's why I'm asking. How many have been requested and how many have been given?
The language in the original bill was may and not shall.
Right.
Just to clarify.
Right. That's the way it is, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Through the chair, Representative Gillis, we offer a variety of temporary licenses, and I'll be following up to the committee per Representative Fields' request. But we do have, and Representative Tuck, my trusty sidekick, mm-hmm. is here with additional information. We just did a review of 2019, and the numbers stay low. The military spouse licenses that have been issued are pretty low. We don't have a push a button and this is the number of military licenses that are available type of system. I think the report would help us get there because what's expected in the report would cause us to make some database changes. But for right now, as far as our staff's analysis goes, we may have had 100 military spouse applications last year, or certainly fewer than 100. There are some other military-related types of licenses that are available, but as far as military spouse temporary licenses, certainly less than 100. When this bill came up last year, there was testimony from military defense families saying that sometimes military spouses didn't know that there was a special temporary license, or they didn't identify themselves as a military spouse, so we could be getting more applications in from people who are military spouses and we won't even know it because they're not mm-hmm. raising their hands and saying it. So our numbers are low. We expect there are more, and with the expansion starting this summer in Eielson, we're expecting quite a few.
Mm-hmm. One follow-up.
Would
you say 50% of the requests have been granted from the military spouse for a license?
Through the chair, Representative Gillis, if they're qualified, then they're issued a license, and I would expect that almost all of them are qualified because they're coming from a state where they're already licensed, and the law that's on the books that the legislature passed in 2011 only says that they have to pay their fees, prove that they're a military spouse, hold a license or certificate in another state, be fingerprinted if it's required, and be discipline-free. So it's not that's what the legislature is the current mandate. So it's not anything that would be unusual for them. They would have already had those credentials in another state, and they can transfer them over.
All right. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, with the zero fiscal note, how the department would be able to handle the database changes needed for the reporting requirement with no additional cost incurred.
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, we've been, over the last few years, we've been working to figure out a way to make sure that we can get certain levels of database changes done within our staff without having to request additional IT help, and our department does have quite a few IT folks that we can work into their workflow. So we're trying to keep the cost low and not have to hire contractors or additional staff.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Chambers, how many boards do you have that oversee licensure?
Madam Chair, we have 21 licensing boards, and then we have 22 professions that I regulate as a board.
All right. And how many of them have executive administrators?
Madam Chair, 7.
All right. So do you feel like that you have the capacity to undertake the support of the boards that would be necessary to explore military spouse licensure in each case?
Yes, Madam Chair, we have systems for communicating with boards and sort of farming out to our management team that communication responsibility, and we do that pretty regularly with fee changes and other types of changes.
All right, thank you. And I just want to just note, you were going to send a list of what temporary licenses have been issued, and if you can send that to the chair, then we'll distribute it to the entire committee.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much for your time today, Ms. Chambers. Representative Tuck, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to add a few things. One thing is the Department of Defense has contracted with the University of Minnesota to evaluate occupational board implementation of laws and policies to support military spouses of all 50 states. You should hopefully have in your packet a report titled Military Spouse Licensure Portability Examination State Report for Alaska. Mm-hmm. And in that, they talk about a couple of results from the data collection. And just a reminder, the boards may issue, because it is upon board by board on whether or not they want to do that. And that's the reason why the original House Bill 28 had may in there, because we didn't want to require this from every board. There's some boards, as we heard about the medical board, they possibly may not want to do something like this. And so one of the bullet points in their general findings is stating that there's no information available pertaining to how many spouses have transferred their licenses in the last year. Mm-hmm. Spouses cannot be licensed by endorsement or temporary licensure for any of the 6 boards that they were looking at. And some of the boards that they were looking at was cosmetology, dental hygiene, massage therapy, mental health counseling, occupational therapy, and the real estate commission. Now, I want to just highlight on the real estate commission, to do a temporary license, spouses need to complete 40 hours of Alaska-approved pre-licensing real estate courses and pass the Alaska Real Estate Salesperson exam. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, they must submit a salesperson's license by examination application for licensure with the appropriate licensing fees. And then they weren't sure about the processing time. It varies. And the staff reported that the length of time cannot really be estimated. So it's really on a board-by-board situation. I think it is necessary to find out where we're at with our boards, to be able to see where the legislature can help out, and to understand why simply some occupations may not have licensure. And I want a temporary licensure. And I also want to, Madam Chair, respond to a concern from Representative Zach Fields. And I share the same concern when we look at licensing. This is specifically to spouses, but if we generally allow licenses, I'm going to give you a real life example. We had Walmart was re-outfitting a lot of their lighting in their stores, and they brought in a bunch of electricians from Texas, and it was only like a 2 or 3 week project. And do we really want to have expanded licensure temporarily for all people? Because that's really abusing the system. When they brought up this electrical contractor from down south, came up, did all this retrofit work, and then took off. And even though they were required to have a license here in the state of Alaska, there was no way to implement any sanctions or stop work order, because it just happened too quickly. So we want to circumvent that. We don't want to also see professional hunters from other states be able to come up here and just all of a sudden be able to hunt big game up here on a temporary status. So we got to be very careful how we walk on this. Restricting it to military spouses I believe, is a good way to go, especially when some of those families are only deployed for a short period while they're up here. We want to make sure that their families are taken care of and that people can still practice their profession. However, if they're going to be here for a time period after that, then it would require them to eventually get their license, full-fledged license.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you, Chair, through the Chair. Representative Tuck, I'm glad you brought up, because it was catching my attention, the University of Minnesota analysis of the portability exam. And my question has to do with the six boards or professions that they chose to examine. And I'm curious as to whether we were one of 50 states and they were using the same six across, or whether those six were selected because it's the area that we've had the highest number of applicants in, or whether it's an area where military spouses are the most likely to hold licensure and ask for reciprocity. So.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, Ms. Perot may be able to answer that question better than I can. And I don't even remember what the date is for this. I don't see a date on this, and I don't know when the University of Minnesota went into that. It could be that at the time that they looked into this, they may have been the only board.
I can address that question.
But I'll allow Ms. Perot to answer it.
All right, and we have Tammy Perot with the Department of Defense on the line, who is here to provide testimony and can answer questions. Ms. Perot.
Representative Hannon, through the chair. I can.
Would you like to put yourself on the record formally?
Yes, Tammy Perot with the Department of Defense, the Defense State Liaison Office. I can address this question. These specific occupations were chosen randomly by the researchers as they felt they represented a cross section of occupations which military spouses participated in. And they used these occupations when they did the research in all 50 states. And so there's an identical report for all 50 states, which each state received. So you can find the same report, which addresses these same issues in all 50 states.
You follow up?
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Ms. Perot, when was the study conducted?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the study was conducted in 2017. And after 2017, after this study was conducted, we had this information for the states and allowed them and asked them to go back and look at how their occupational licensure laws were being implemented. So that's part of what has led to HB 93 this reporting request is we have asked states to look at how is this working for our military spouses. Many times we've seen the implementation of the May versus the Shell isn't always working that well for our military spouses. Even though you have, we estimate 2,313 licensed spouses in the state of Alaska, we only see about 100 of them using that expedited process. So those types of numbers seem quite out of balance, we think.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Representative Cook.
I just want to clarify that House Bill 28 says that boards may issue military temporary licenses, but it also requires, by shall, expedite application procedures for military spouses. So there's a combination of may, shall in there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You've certainly initiated some interest in the topic, Representative Tuck. Ms. Perot, did you have any additional testimony you wanted to add to the body of knowledge today?
I have provided a PowerPoint presentation, which I believe most of which has been covered. You can see on the last slide provides a continuum of effort on license portability. Mm-hmm. This is a slide that shows where different efforts have been made for license portability by different states, mm-hmm. and where Alaska falls on this continuum. You can see on this continuum on the last slide that compacts as as Ms. Chambers described, are on the far end of the continuum. Alaska is working in the place of implementing expedited licensure, and other states are still working on temporary or no licensure portability. And I just would like to ask folks to look at that slide to help better understand licensure portability and that continuum. I'm subject to your questions, Chair Spottenholz.
All right. Are there any
members of the committee?
Are there any questions for Ms. Perot? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Perot, on that licensure portability slide that is showing the continuum, where would you place Alaska on that?
Yes. So Alaska has been placed, has actually received a rating from the Department of Defense on this slide. And Alaska is in the yellow zone for this particular subject, which we're talking about today, and is fully implementing its current laws. So it's currently implementing its current laws. It has not, however, implemented or adopted any interstate occupational licensure compacts. And it has fully implemented and is currently implementing and allowing spouses to know about its laws, but it's just simply has not, does not have the full adoption of those laws. And I'm sure Ms. Chambers has further information on that rating, which she would be able to share with you.
Thank you for asking the question, Representative Hannon, because I don't see Alaska on this continuum, actually. So, yeah, it might have been the intention that it was on there, but it's not on there. So.
It's not pointed
Mr.
out on
Mason,
here, but
would you like
it would
to
be,
identify
oh,
yourself
I'm
for
sorry.
The record?
Through the chair, Mike Mason, staff for Representative Tuck. The yellow portion, so it's red, and then there's a kind of two shades of yellow. Mm-hmm. Alaska would be in that portion right there.
And I see a couple of yellow shades, so.
I think it's the second yellow one.
All right. From the right or the left, Mr. Mason?
I believe that is from the left.
All right. Thank you. So the lighter yellow?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Thank you much, Ms. Perot. Thank you very much for introducing the bill, Representative Tuck. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for further consideration by the committee, and we're going to take a brief Eddies. Welcome back, everybody. I would like to clarify that we are not taking up House Bill 235 today. We're holding it over to another day, and we're rolling back up to HB 232, which is Representative Hopkins' bill relating to municipal air quality tax improvement credits and relating to municipal energy efficiency new construction tax credit, and we have a conceptual amendment. Representative Stutz. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to move conceptual amendment 31-LS1355-K.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
All right. And Mr. Madsen, Committee A, would you like to walk us through the conceptual amendment?
Sure thing. Chair Spottenholz, this is Ted Madsen, staff to Representative Spottenholz. The intent behind this conceptual amendment is to allow for municipalities to offer single or multiple year energy efficiency and air quality improvement tax credits. As was pointed out prior to the discussion of House Bill 93, it was unclear whether or not this could be a single or multiple year tax credit appropriation. So now I'm going to read off what the two sections of the legislation would read if this amendment was adopted. Section 1 would read, a municipality may, by ordinance, provide for a single or multiple year air quality improvement tax credit to offset a portion of the property taxes due on real property improvements made during the immediately preceding tax year prior to the municipality's initial approval of the tax credits, including new construction, refurbishments, remodels, and renovations that aid in improving the air quality in the municipality. The municipality shall establish eligibility criteria for the credit in the ordinance adopted under this section. Under Section 2, it would read, a municipality may, by ordinance, provide for a single or multiple-year energy efficiency construction tax credit to offset a portion of the property taxes due on real property improvements made during the immediately preceding tax year prior to the municipality's initial approval of the tax credit, including energy-efficient new construction refurbishments, remodels, and renovations. The municipality shall establish eligibility criteria for the credit in the ordinance adopted under this section. Chair Sponholz, from my understanding of prior committee discussion, it is the intent of the committee that this energy efficiency and air quality improvement tax credit be allowed to be offered over multiple years after the improvements are made. Is that accurate?
That is my intention. My intention is to make sure that local municipalities have the opportunity to extend multi-year tax credits should they choose.
Excellent.
All right. Representative Hopkins, you want to come up and make any comments on the amendment?
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. For the record, this is Representative Hopkins, House District 4. That is the intent of what the initial legislation is. So now that we have language that allows for, specifically lays out for, single or multiple year tax credits for both of these types of improvements, based on when the improvement went in, I support this amendment, this conceptual amendment, to make sure the bill does what we initially wanted it to do.
Is there, Mr. Madsen?
Chair Sponholz, I would like to add, in the final line of the amendment, it says that legislative legal may make conforming changes in line with the intent of this amendment. I believe that through this committee discussion, the intent has become crystal clear, and legislative legal will understand what the intent of the committee is.
And Mr. Madsen, I believe that they will have to make some conforming changes because the amendment is, the line descriptions are just a smidge off. But I think the intention is very clear, and we'll make sure that the language is smooth in the final. The intent is to make sure that we have multi-year tax credits available. All right. Is there any additional discussion? All right. Any comments?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
Are there any remaining objections? All right. Seeing none, the amendment has been adopted. Thank you very much, Mr. Madsen, for your hustle on the topic, and Representative Hopkins for your patience this afternoon.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Sponholz, for hearing our bill.
All right. All right. So I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Madam Chair, I would be delighted to make that motion. I move committee substitute for House Bill 232, Work Order 31, LS 1355/K, as conceptually amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Legislative legal is directed to make any conforming and technical changes as a result of the conceptual amendment.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, the bill moves from the committee. Please hang around to sign the committee report. For wrap up today, we're going to be delayed because of the operating budget on the floor. We are also very likely to have a legislative briefing on the coronavirus response in the state of Alaska, which I think should take precedent. Should we have time, we'll have a hearing on House Bill 27 on flame retardant chemicals and House Bill 235, the TVEP reauthorization. On Friday, we have one bill. We're going to take up House Bill 93, the bill that we discussed today regarding military spouse licenses, really a report on military spouse licenses, and we'll look to the will of the committee on that time. The amendment deadline will be close of business on Thursday, and it is 4:45, and this hearing of the House Labor and Commerce Committee is now adjourned.